Hello and welcome to CJ Evolution, the podcast dedicated to helping criminal justice professionals like you. Now here's your host, fellow CJ Evolutionary, Patrick Fitzgibbons.
Hello everybody, welcome back, CJ Evolution. Very excited to have Lucy Steigerwald on. She is a writer whose work has appeared in publications such as Playboy, Reason, The American Conservative, Vice, Daily Beast, and The Washington Post. She's worked as an associate editor for Reason Magazine and as a freelance editor for The New York Observer. Lucy, welcome. Thank you for coming on.
Thanks very much for having me.
Oh, I'm excited for you to be here. What drove you to writing? You know, I mean, you're into the writing and you love it. What drove you to it?
Boy, that's a really broad question. It's
the highlights.
It's no fun because my dad is also a journalist.
Oh, jeez.
So he brought home several of the magazines you just mentioned each week or month, and this was my fate, basically. It's the thing that I know how to do. And when it goes well, it's very fun, and at the moment it's frustrating, but you know, ask me tomorrow, that kind of thing.
Can you tell us about young voices? You know, you're the assistant editor, correct?
That's the rumor.
Can you tell us about young voices and what it's about?
It's a very cool development organization. It's a nonprofit officially. We're here to help people 30 and under get a jump start in the editorial world. Help them become pundits, but you know, not in the pejorative sense, in the informed sense, in the knowledgeable sense. Help them be better writers, you know, editing their work and telling them what we're doing with that. My pal Steven is there to, you know, get people on podcasts such as this lovely one. basically, I mean, the idea is to kind of get the pro-liberty, as we call it, perspective out there in the world. And help these younger people kind of, you know, be good vehicles of that, I guess.
Now, what's pro-liberty? What does that mean?
Well, you know, I'm never shy about my politics. I'm a libertarian. I've written for a lot of publications that are not overtly libertarian, which is something I think more libertarians should do. You know, it's good to there's liberal stuff. Like Vice or Playboy, where you can talk to them about civil liberties stuff. The American Conservative, you can write some anti-war stuff. You know, there's it's something we talk about at Young Voices. It's not about hiding sort of, you know, the stance of the organization and the stance we kind of look for to varying degrees in our advocates. But it's basically saying, look, we agree with you on X. We agree with you on why, and we're going to talk about it, and maybe we'll get somewhere that we all want to go.
Yeah, and you shouldn't have to. I mean, you shouldn't have to agree on everything, right?
Sure.
No, yeah, I mean, that's a great thing about, you know, free speech and all, is just that we can agree to disagree, or at least most of us. I mean, some people get pissed off about it, but yeah, I mean, it's good to have that disagreement, right?
Well, it is serious stuff, though. As libertarian, obviously, I think I wish the disagreement was all we had, and the forcing people to do this and that part was not part of the deal.
So. Yeah. What are young people? What's younger generation? Because I'm a little older, you know. I mean, I'm almost at that magic age of 50. So what are? I mean, I have kids, and I kind of hear their take. You know, I have kids that are in their 20s, and I kind of hear their things. About what they're worried about, the younger generation. But what do you think, and maybe it's a huge question, it probably is a loaded question, but what do you think some of the things younger generations, your generation, Lucy, are worried about now?
Well, I mean...
Or concerned about or whatever.
We're all worried about our crippling student loan debt.
Oh, geez, yes.
We have that, I have that, we all have that. You know, some of the good stuff is the increased tolerance for stuff that, you know... consensual activities, gay rights, trans rights, maybe cut down on this drug war business. Like, that's the really positive stuff for millennials, that kind of generation. Obviously, if you want to worry about it more, there's, you know, college students and they get criticized for being too delicate. I think there's something to that, but certainly not everything to that.
Little snowflakes.
I'm agnostic on that. I think there's things to be said there. But it's interesting, you know, it's an interesting generation. Everyone calls us the worst, but, you know, that's every generation.
Well, that's every generation. Let me get your take on this. And I was getting into a little bit of politics right here. What do you think about what happened in Berkeley recently, where they were kind of shutting down certain people from talking? And to me, that kind of shocked me, because Berkeley's like, you know, like the freedom of speech, First Amendment kind of cradle. And they're shutting down some people to go speak. I'm trying to say I'm pro or for any you know political thing, but I'm just saying, what do you think about them shutting down and saying, look, we don't want you to come talk?
Well, I mean, you're right about Berkeley, and back in the day, so to speak, it does appear that college students, you know, when they weren't protesting being shipped off to Vietnam or something, were often protesting that they were being treated like children, mm-hmm. and they were rallying for free speech and expression and for the college to stop micromanaging them. Mm-hmm. And I absolutely do think that college students today are frequently requesting more micromanagement. They want the administration in their business and everyone else's business.
Why, Lucy?
I mean, part of it is a good impulse. You know, the impulse of tolerance and anti-racism and anti-homophobia and anti-transphobia.
I get that. Yeah.
It's a good impulse.
It is. It is.
It gets mixed up with, you know, the lack of understanding of the very baseline Enlightenment idea that speech and violence are not the same thing. You know, mm-hmm. I remember reading an article from a girl, I think on the newspaper, probably at Smith College, after there was this kerfuffle there, when a woman, literally in the context of a free speech conversation, used a racial slur in the most appropriate context possible to discuss it, you know, Huckleberry Finn, that sort of thing. Mm-hmm. And this young college girl was referring to it as violence. And I remember they edited the transcript of the free speech debate. Every once in a while, there is sort of a right-winger's dream of the most just-no-kids moment at colleges. And there is a lack of appreciation for free speech and the difference between violence and words. But there's always more to it. Not always. There's often more to it than that. I mean, when you hear that, you know, Milo Yiannopoulos was putting the Immigration and Customs Enforcement phone number up at his talks, or mm-hmm. harassing a trans student by name, things like that, where you could say, okay, a college can say, we don't want a speaker who's going to harass individuals.
Well, I get that. I get that. You know, nobody wants that, and I agree. You don't want that on a college campus. But when you have a differing view, you know, why wouldn't you, if you disagreed with that view, why wouldn't you want that person to come, or anybody to come, if you had, and as long as it's, you know, not harassing, like you said, or threatening or whatever, but why wouldn't you have that person or persons come to talk about it? I mean, that's the whole free speech, right? I mean, that's the whole, you could talk about it as adults.
I also think that there is a difference in sort of the setting. If, you know, the Republican group sponsors Milo Yiannopoulos to do mm-hmm. some obviously contentious Q&A, you can, I mean, you know, if you go to people of his ilk's events and you get mad, you're doing exactly what they want and they
exactly.
love it. But you can go there and you can ask questions. Now, if some important, powerful, or formerly powerful figure comes, say, to speak at commencement and there's no, you know, place for questions, you know, there's moments where you can protest because you think, I don't want to sit here and act like I endorse this. But there's a lack of understanding that, yeah, there maybe, you know, I'm a liberal, and there's a Republican group on campus, and they're bringing this idiot that I hate. But maybe that's not a thing to protest over. Maybe you should, you know, worry.
Yeah, yeah.
Maybe you should worry if Madeleine Albright's coming to commencement, and you're not allowed to ask questions, and you're supposed to applaud.
Yeah,
know?
I mean, that's the thing I just don't get.
Nuance.
I just don't understand. You know, I mean, and, you know, I don't know. You say you're angry about war. Let's talk about war, Lucy. Get you all fired up.
That will do it. I wish the damn kids would be more fired up about war and less about Milo Yiannopoulos, even though he is
exactly.
terrible.
So what can you elaborate on that a little bit?
why war is bad?
Well, no. I mean, it just kind of elaborate your stance on that and why you're so angry about it. I mean, I get the obvious that war, I mean, people are dying and stuff like that, but can you elaborate?
Well, there's a couple of avenues. From the libertarian perspective, there's a lot of things. Libertarianism has some diversity and some debate within it. And there's some issues where people say you can come on different sides. And libertarians, over the many years I've been a libertarian, have been a little bit disappointing on war because they sort of nod to the idea that, okay, well, if it happens in war, it doesn't count as murder, theft, kidnapping, assault, all the things, the worst things, all the things libertarians hate, all of it happens in war. And I fundamentally object to the idea that just because you wave the magic war incantation, my libertarian principles, respect for human life, goes out the window. I don't think that wars are well planned. I think they're the ultimate in central planning, which conservatives never notice. I mean, they object to central planning domestically, and yet they think big government can be applied to this foreign country that they Googled on the plane going over there. I mean, there's so many arrogant things that, this is how conspiracy theorists are born, because there's so many bad plans that have happened that seem like they were,
Do you
they
ever
failed on purpose.
think that there's no other option
Well, I
but
think at
war?
the very least, you have to know what your goals are. I mean, the people who say there's no other option tend to say that every single time. I'm not saying you're saying that, but there's a habit there.
Well, let's talk about. Oh, go ahead. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
I mean, I was going to go on some, World War II-esque tangent if you want to, if I
Oh,
go
no,
there.
do it. Do it, Lucy. I want to hear it.
Well, I mean, so World War II is the easy one, right? It's the good war. You're fighting against the worst guy ever. But there are all these nuances that you don't really get. Like the U.S. was allied with the other worst guy, second, let's say, for Joseph Stalin. The knowledge of the Holocaust was fairly widespread in powerful circles fairly early. Everybody knew the Jews were being treated in this horrible way. They didn't know quite the extent of it, but they knew enough. And they didn't really do anything until right at the end. Basically, the world sat around saying, oh God, somebody should put the Jews somewhere and help them. And they waited until the war ran out. And yet, afterwards, you get, oh my God, we didn't know when the camps were liberated, which is not true. And yet, also, well, we fought for the noblest of reasons to get rid of Hitler, right? Okay, worst guy ever, fine. But he's the worst guy because the Holocaust. But they weren't really fighting. I mean, if fundamentally, if the goal had been save the people who were being most hurt by Adolf Hitler, things would have looked different. The U.S. would have admitted everybody fleeing, not, lower than the immigration quotas from Eastern Europe, etc., at that time, which is what happened. The goal was not to save the people who were most endangered by Hitler. That's not true. I wish it had been.
So shifting gears a little bit, what do you think, what's your take, what is going on right now with North Korea? I mean, a lot of, posturing, and we have, we're moving assets over to that area. Obviously, we have, I can't remember, thousands of troops in South Korea. So what is your take on that?
Oh God, North Korea is so interesting and terrible. And trying to think, it's like at least 20,000 troops over there, isn't it? It's like a huge number.
I think it's more than that. I mean,
Yeah,
I
me
was once in
too.
the
I mean, at
military, so I
least
should
that.
probably know this, but I want to say it's about 30,000.
I was gonna say that actually. That sounds right to me. But I mean,
So, and it's a scary situation. It's a very tense situation, that's going on right now.
in most cases, even with somewhere that makes the U.S. nervous, like Iran. I like to argue, like, okay, there's some serious mistrust on both sides for good reasons, but there's 70,000 people in Iran, and most of the, I mean, those people know what would happen if they, tried to nuke Israel or somewhere in the U.S. Like, they would turn to sand, and they know that. North Korea, I mean, people worry about, the mullahs and what have you, but North Korea does act in a way that feels even more irrational. But they're so into posturing, and they're so weak in a lot of ways that it's hard for me to imagine that they would really cross the line. I mean, God knows they cross the line with their own people that they kill. I don't know. I haven't been reading enough about it lately, but I've read about it more in the past, and it's hard for me to picture it really coming down to some the day after nightmare scenario. I am actually an optimist in spite of, you know, my rants for the past 15 minutes. So I'm hoping that, you know, it can be resolved without any kind of war. I have no idea how the Koreas could ever unify. I mean, that's this huge mess. But an organization I've donated money to before, actually, called Liberty North Korea. That's the kind of way you can help North Koreans. And I'm not sure what other methods would actually work. Where I mean, they have people on the ground who help refugees get to places and bring them to the U.S. and house them, do everything they can. And beyond that, I don't know how you can really help those people, which is very upsetting.
Yeah.
And
and the president, you know, Trump has a very, very hawkish, you know, stance towards North Korea. Because I think what has happened is, you know, I mean, how many administrations have dealt with North Korea, you know, in the past? This isn't something that just kind of exploded, you know, that just happened overnight. They've been dealing with this. It was President Obama. I think it was Bush before that. You know, and Clinton was dealing with North Korea. So, I mean, this isn't something that just happened overnight. I mean, it's just been simmering for so long.
It's a very strange,
Big
old cult. I mean, that's what it is.
All right. Shifting gears now. So I already got you fired up about about war. Let's talk about prisons, Lucy, really quick. Let's talk about, what are you angry about prisons for?
Presidents, did you say?
No, prisons. I'm sorry, prisons.
Oh, prisons. I was like, I'm angry about presidents. I hate them all.
No. I don't want to go that route. I want to go. That's probably a whole entirely different show. But let's talk about prisons. What's going on?
Well,
incarceration rates and stuff like that, or
we've got a lot of people in prison and jail in America. Last I checked, it was 2.3 million people. About 700 of them are in jail, and the rest are in federal and state prisons, and that's an awful lot. Depending on how you sort of do the math, and there's some debate, like, do we really know how many people are in prison in China, for example? But, like, you know, that's, we have the most people in prison, and it's so much more than what they call, you know, the rest of the Western civilized, whatever vaguely insulting term, world. So what, you know, what are we doing with that? Why do we have all those people?
Well, what do you think some of the reasons that, you know, I mean, a lot of those probably are drug crimes. I mean, I know because I'm in the system, not working in the prisons, but I'm in the criminal justice system. So, I mean, a lot of those are drug offenses. And I know President Obama, you know, some of his final stuff that he was doing before he left office was he was trying to, you know, kind of ease the burden off the system with kind of doing some pardons and kind of clemency things with people who are charged with drug crimes. But what is we could talk all night about what are some of the solutions. I mean, what do you think some of the solutions are? I mean, I have no idea. I mean, you know, people want law and order. They want people who are charged and convicted of crimes, more importantly, convicted of crimes to do some time. And the reality is, you probably know this, Lucy. I mean, just like the listeners, the majority of people are going to get out of prison someday. You know, very few percentage of people are in there for life or death row. The majority of people are going to get out of prison. So I think – I've always said this. I think we need to spend more time with reentry programs and, I mean, we should probably do it on the front too, obviously. But, you know, devote more resources to reentry and to try to help people get on the right path, you know, when they get out of prison so they don't reoffend, and that contributes to the recidivism rates. What do you think?
Absolutely. I mean, I have no disagreement from me on that point. I think, well, one thing that should have been done, and obviously you can't start from zero with this, but is that most people should not be put behind bars.
Why do you think? What's your reason behind that?
Every consensual crime, you know, prostitution, drug use, even drug sales in most circumstances, there's a lot of things that are crimes that I don't think should be criminal at all.
Like what?
Everything with drugs, vice crimes are the obvious ones. You know, there's bureaucratic licensing sort of, like, there's, we have a lot of laws.
Yeah.
I think most of them we don't need. I think that even thieves, a lot of them, I mean, and, you know, liberals are often very vindictive about white-collar criminals, as, even when they talk about prison reform. And if you have someone wealthy who is screwing people out of a lot of money, what good does it do to put them behind bars when they could be paying it back in whatever way would work? You know, I mean, get more creative. It's the same. It's honestly, it's the same as with the war thing. It's this, it's this cudgel, this heavy blunt instrument as a solution, and all that does is put people in these miserable, dangerous, deadly conditions and teach them how to be better criminals and worse people. And after a while, you know, send them back into the world again, and then be really surprised when they come back.
Well, I think, you know, I agree with a little bit of that, but getting back to the vice crime, so what do you, you know, a lot of, you know, with prostitution, and to be fair, it is legal in some places in the United States, like, you know, in Vegas, you know, and I think outside of Vegas, it's legal, and probably some other places too, but, you know, a lot of, you know, these things, or I can't say a lot, but some of them, like prostitution, comes down to a quality of life. You're right. I mean, it's a quid pro quo. You know, they're getting, you know, I'm, you know, you're providing a service, and I'm getting something out of it, and I'm paying you for that. But a lot of times, you know, the reason why it's illegal in a lot of states is because, you know, that brings in another element, Lucy. It brings in the drug element, and it brings in other things that come with that, you know. So I think, you know, quality of life issues as far as, like, drugs. I mean, what do you tell, you know, I mean, here in Colorado, I mean, you know, marijuana is legal now. You know, you can't just grow boatloads of it, but, you know, it is legal. But if certain things were made not, you know, criminal, you know, there wasn't any repercussions for your actions, then what do you tell victims?
Victims,
you know,
of what?
Well, say you have, say, for instance, we'll just, I'm not saying you're saying this, but say somebody, you know, one day says, yeah, cocaine's legal, and people are just driving around hammered all the time and high as a kite on cocaine, and they you know, they go and they slam into somebody, and they kill them. I mean, alcohol, I know, you know, I know what you're probably thinking. Alcohol's legal. Yeah, it's legal.
Yep.
But what do you say to those people? Is it okay that pilots fly around high as a kite, you know? And I mean,
but it's not okay if pilots fly drunk right now.
No, I agree with that. I agree with that.
Driving is a serious problem, and some of the attempted solutions to it are quite unlibertarian, and that, again, is another conversation. But fundamentally, we know that alcohol makes you a worse driver. Pot is probably not as bad for you when you're driving. Cocaine, I'm going to assume, is not ideal as well. But, you know, when it comes down to it, the problem is, oh, you killed someone, not that you were on
well, I mean, anything, you know, not necessarily. I mean, that's the extreme example. But, I mean, you know, just driving erratically and, you know, blowing stop signs or whatever. So I'm just saying, yeah, and there are a lot of laws on the books. I agree with you. You know, we have a ton of laws on the books. But I think, you know, legalizing a bunch of things just for the sake of not filling up prisons, you know, I don't know if I agree with that.
Well, I mean, not filling our prisons is only the first wonderful benefit to legalizing drugs. There's lots of other ones, including basically everything that's bad about drug use and drug abuse is already going on. But on top of it is a black market, crime-causing element. Same with prostitution. You mentioned the criminal element.
Yeah.
Well, that's a black market element.
Sure.
That exists because people are afraid to call the cops when someone's overdosing. They're afraid to call the cops when somebody with a gun, you know, takes their money instead of selling them the weed they were buying, or any sort of violent, coercive situation. And you have a whole enormous number of people who cannot go to the cops, who cannot ask for help without fear. And it's not, I mean, it's not fixing anything.
Well,
and
not necessarily.
How many decades do we need before we
Well, in Colorado, that? And I can only speak for my state, but in Colorado, legislation is out there. It's been out there for a while. And if you're talking about, like, opiate use or heroin use, there are some laws that shield. The problem is a lot of people don't know this. They're just not educated. They're just not educating themselves. But here in Colorado, and again, I can't speak for other states, there are laws on the books that shield, say, an opiate user or a heroin user, and they're afraid of calling the cops. Well, you know, because they are afraid of getting arrested. In a lot of situations, we're not going to arrest them. A lot of things, that we, most of the time, we're going to get there, we're going to administer Narcan, Naxalone, which basically reverses the OD, and we're not going to charge them. So there are laws that are already in place in terms of, like, opiate users, you know, but I think a lot of people don't know about this, and they're assuming a lot when the case is not the case.
Some of the laws might be newer, or in the case of prostitution, I've spoken to people who have worked, you know, in the sex industry. Mm-hmm. There's a woman who blogs about it. I met her once, named Maggie McNeil, and she says that cops exploit prostitutes, sex workers, it's, you know, whatever you want to call them, all the time. And there's absolutely no recourse for them. And
what does she mean by exploit? I mean, I know what it means, but exactly, what are they doing?
Well, she says that cops rape them much more than you would think. And she can't, you know, hand over the evidence for that. And, it could be exaggerated or what have you. But we do know that people in that position, they're not in a powerful position. They're not in a position where they can go and get help easily or feel safe asking for help. Part of that's a problem with the cops and the, you know, the lack of accountability there. But part of it is these people are in a profession that is not allowed, and that all that's doing is endangering them. That's all it's doing. It's not stopping it. It's endangering them.
But if let me ask you this. I mean, so, you know, if would you want, you know, say in your neighborhood or you know, and I'm not saying everybody out there that is doing this is such a horrible person. Okay, I mean, people have their reasons. I get it. But would you want that in your neighborhood, knowing that there's a chance it would draw in another element? I mean, say you have kids. I'm not saying you, I mean, say you have young kids, and what if your kids are on the, and they have to, they're witnessing this stuff. I mean, would you want that?
Well, I mean, what are they witnessing? Children is one of the oldest, nastiest excuses in the book.
I'm just saying. I'm not saying they're going to witness the act, but I'm, you know, I mean, come on, kids are very perceptive. They're very keen to what's going on. You know, I mean, what would you tell? I mean, so, you know, a girl, let's play this out. Let's quarterback this. So a woman is sitting on the, or standing on the corner. She's getting in and out of a car. You know, a car comes, drops her off. And say, a kid see this. But what do you explain? How do you explain that to kids?
Well, I will say that if it were legal, prostitution, I think that the sort of seedier, more cliched elements would lessen. Mm-hmm. If women, mostly women, I'm generalizing, felt safer bringing people to their house or renting somewhere without this fear of arrest or being, you know, patted down or, you know, being given the side eye by the cops, I think there would be less of the classic street walking element. Mm-hmm. If I had my theoretical child, I don't know how old they are, little Susie or little Jimmy. It depends on, you know, what age they are and what knowledge they should have about sex. And at some point, probably way earlier than, you know, nervous parents listening would like, you could tell them.
Well, I know, you know, being in law enforcement, I'm not on the street anymore. But when I was on the street, I mean, we have a lot of hotels where I'm at. And, you know, I do know that in a lot of cases, not all cases, but a lot of cases when, you know, prostitution was going on, believe it or not, prostitution does go on in hotels. And a lot of people out there that, are, you know, are in criminal justice, they could probably do a test of this. You know, you're bringing in that other element, that drug element, you know, and the heroin addicts and the meth users and stuff like that. So, I mean, not in all cases, but in a lot of cases, you're attracting that element. Doesn't it necessarily have to be out on the street? I think that's part of it, but it can be other places like hotels and stuff. Look, I just want to sleep, you know, tonight. I don't want to have to be witnessing what's going on in the lobby.
but again, though, it's happening, right?
Yeah.
It's still happening now. And what we're doing is we're making it more criminal, more violent, less safe for everyone. And there's still heroin use and prostitution and people.
But you're saying if we legalize heroin use and prostitution, that it would just all go away. Everybody would be happy.
No,
and
I would never. Of course not. I'm saying that the situation now, it's obviously not working.
Yeah.
We have spent $1 trillion on the war on drugs since. Yeah. It was made official by Nixon, but you know, you could date the war on drugs back a century to the early outlawing of opium and like this sort of initial, oh no, the reefer makes you go crazy type stuff.
Oh, reefer madness.
Oh, yeah. You
Yeah,
know,
Reefer Madness.
Particularly for white women, because the Reefer Madness. I mean, it's not another thing that we have to know. Like, okay, libertarians are frequently accused of being utopian. However, libertarians, and myself included, are the ones acknowledging that this prostitution is not going anywhere. Drug use is not going anywhere. You need harm reduction and choice. So what you need is to help the people who need help, who ask for help, without fear of being thrown in jail or fined or shamed in front of the local news cameras or anything like that. There are people who, obviously people can smoke weed, and I wouldn't recommend doing it, at least not every day, 10 times a day. There are people who can do harder drugs without addiction, without overdosing. I would not recommend it.
Yeah.
It has been done. One of the founders of Johns Hopkins, I believe, was a functioning morphine addict, I think.
What?
I
mean, are you serious?
Yeah. I think it was morphine. That's a fact I learned in my former colleague Jacob Solomon's book, Saying Yes in Defense of Drug Use, which is a very interesting book. Even if you, you know, might vehemently disagree, I think it's a very worthwhile book to read. I know people, you know, I'm not gonna suggest that I should be ashamed of anything if I had done it, but I'm not the type. But I know people who've experimented with, you know, the kind of drugs that I think are very scary.
Sure.
And I wouldn't recommend using. And they are okay, and they haven't overdosed. It's a risky behavior for adults that some adults enjoy. Hallucinogens, that's a whole other issue, and issue of whether that can help with PTSD. There's a million interesting associated issues here. But fundamentally, it's an activity that some adults engage in, the way some adults, you know, go base jumping or what have you. And what we need to do is inform people of the risks. Another consequence of drug prohibition has been a lack of scientific knowledge about what drugs do. I mean, people make fun of hippies who think, you know, marijuana is magic and can cure cancer and everything.
Yeah.
And they're probably, you know, totally over a cliff there, but marijuana appears to be very helpful for children with epilepsy, for example, cannabis oil. And people were barred for decades from experimenting and really figuring out, okay, what can this help with? Things like that.
Well, it's, yeah, I agree with you, Lucy. I mean, I think there's, I mean, that's, there's very, there's a lot of medicinal benefits to this. I mean, I agree. Cancer patients, AIDS patients, you know, other people that are afflicted with medical issues. I'm not saying, you know, I mean, that's one thing. But I've seen firsthand what harder drugs, and maybe the people that can do the harder drugs, you know, like you've indicated, they don't get addicted. But I would be willing to guess that they are the minority. They're not the majority, because I've been on the front lines and I've seen what hardcore drug usage can do, like heroin addicts and meth users. And these people, it's not like you do these once or twice and you walk away from it. You are addicted, especially nowadays with the type of heroin that is out on the street. I mean, it is more powerful than ever. And so the addictive properties are there. So, I mean, more than ever, you know. So maybe you're one of the lucky few, not you personally, Lucy, but maybe somebody out there is, you know, can do it and not get addicted. But, you know, like I said, I mean, it's an ongoing debate. It really is. I don't know what the answer is. Maybe legalization, that's the answer. I mean, I don't know. I don't think it'll ever come to that point. I mean, we've got to, you know, we've got to that point with marijuana in Colorado. As far as other drugs, I don't know.
It's going to take a while if we get there. I hope we do, because, I mean, you mentioned heroin, things like that. A lot of that stuff is cut with worse things.
Oh, sure. And that's my point. Is that, you know, how do you know? I mean, if it's legal, I mean, it's still going to be out there. It's going to be cut. It's going to be, you know, fentanyl and all this other crap.
But don't you want to go to the corner store and get, you know, your heroin with its very specific ingredients? I know, I'm like, it sounds bizarre even to me.
But what I'm saying is, you talked about it before, Lucy. Just because you're still going to have a black market. We saw that in Colorado. We saw that in Colorado where, I mean, the initial reaction, well, you know, heroin, you know, is legal now. Or, I'm sorry, marijuana is legal now in Colorado. Well, you know, you still have a black market. You still have cartels wanting a piece of the action.
Maybe the taxes are too high. Maybe the prices are too high. Maybe there's too many restrictions and regulations still.
But definitely an interesting
debate. I mean, you have a fair point that black markets don't completely vanish.
No, they don't. They don't. They don't. And
that's a fair point.
Yeah, it is. And well, Lucy, I love talking to you. I could talk to you all night. But if people want to reach out to you, where can they find you?
Oh, the easiest way to find me probably is Twitter, because it's a journalist. I can always go on Twitter and justify it to myself that I'm working in some way, trying to find news, etc. And yeah, my Twitter is Lucy Stagg, so it's just at LucyStagg.
And youngvoicesadvocates.com, correct? Is that the right website?
That sounds right. Well, haven't been there long.
Well, Lucy, I appreciate you coming on the show. It's always good to you know, hear other views and other sides of the story. So thank you so much for coming on. I want to bring you back on if you're up for it.
Oh, absolutely.
And I want to talk about other stuff, because I want to get your take. I want to get your take on other stuff like that's going on outside of law or outside of the drug issue or the drug debate. But I want to get your take about other things that are going on in criminal justice, if you'd be willing to come back on.
Yeah, let's go another round. I'm ready.
All right, Lucy. Take care, and thank you for coming on.
Thank you.
All right, bye-bye.
Thanks for listening to CJ Evolution. Be sure to head over to iTunes and rate and review the podcast, and reach out to Patrick on Facebook, LinkedIn, Twitter, Anchor, or Snapchat. We'll see you next time on CJ Evolution.